The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Like your crazy ex that just won't go away, Russia is back in the news. Last night, two bombshells in the Russian investigation. Number one, U.S. investigators wiretapped former campaign chairman Paul Manafort under secret FISA court orders before and after the election. This is huge, unprecedented, never been done before. Two, the Mueller prosecutors told Manafort that they had planned to indict him. So let's start here with number one. According to the sources that spoke with CNN, Manafort became the subject of an FBI investigation in 2014 that looked into a number of consulting firms that did work with Ukraine's former ruling party. Manafort is a guy that long before he had anything to do with Donald Trump, we told you about. He was a bad guy and shouldn't be near any presidential politics, no matter which side it was on. The second surveillance warrant came after the government intercepted communications between Manafort and suspected Russian operatives. And number two, on top of investigating Trump associates' communications with Russian operatives, Mueller has Manafort under investigation for possible violation of tax laws, money laundering, and requirements to disclose foreign lobbying. After the FBI raided Manafort's house, investigators told Manafort that he is going to face criminal charges. So here's what all of this means. If these reports are true, that level of corruption so close to the president is seriously disturbing, especially since the corruption is tied to the number one geopolitical foe, Russia. I want to make this clear. These reports do not mean Manafort is guilty of anything. At least yet.
It's Tuesday, September 19th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, we always try to start each hour with something that we think is big news and get it out right away. And We are making a lot of changes with glennbeck.com and theblaze.com and everything else. And I'm trying to make things more simple and also reflective of what you want to talk about. And up at glennbeck.com, they started something yesterday that is going to be out and we're just starting working on. It is Reader's Choice. And basically what you get is parts of my show prep. And we ask you, what do you want to talk about? And yesterday, the Reader's Choice was number one, U.S. government wiretaps former campaign chairman. Number two, North Korea, which we'll get to here in a second. Number three, the UN debut. Then Maria, Hurricane Maria. Self-driving cars, number five. Comey, did Comey cost Hillary the election? Distant, number six. My question is, where's the real news, Stu? Where's the real news?
Those are all really big stories.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest stories in America today.
May I just say, I have right here, headline, Doomsday, World Will End on September 23rd.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's a pretty big story? That might be bigger than the Manafort story? September 23rd.
What's the date? It's September 19th. We've got 4 days to do that. I mean, it's a big story on the 22nd,
right?
Maybe.
Oh,
certainly the 23rd.
So
I would say
it.
We definitely lead with it on the 23rd.
So have you heard about the September 23rd prediction?
I will say Saturday is the 23rd, so we actually will not lead with it on the 23rd.
Right.
Okay. Maybe the 22nd we hit it.
Or the 25th.
Yeah, we can hit it on the 25th. The review of it and everything. How much did you like that apocalypse?
Right. So have you heard about this? There's a lot of people that actually really believe September 23rd is a key date in the book of Revelation.
Okay.
Have you not heard that?
What's their evidence here? Is this different than the one, remember the one a few years ago where the guys, I think that was in September too, wasn't it? where they thought it was going to end. And he took out all the ads on the subways in New York and all the trains. And he said that the world was going to end.
Yeah, well, he was wrong. This time it's right.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That's the difference.
So it's based on Revelation 12. And a great sign appeared in heaven, woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and the head of on her crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and was crying out in birth pangs and the agony of giving birth. So this is what they're saying. In the passage, the woman is Virgo. On September 23rd, both the sun and the moon will be in Virgo, as will the planet Jupiter. However, this occurrence happens naturally every 12 years, but don't, this is a rare alignment, okay?
But every 12 years, like, you know, it's like, but the there US
is
all,
but there is also something else called the Lion of the Tribe of Judah, which, is also, you know, a pretty rare occurrence, but they're happening together this time.
I mean, your case is almost airtight.
Well, that's what I thought. I'm reading this and I'm thinking, how do you not see? Neither the Roman Catholic Church nor the Protestant or Eastern Orthodox sects are endorsing the prediction of the end of the world.
None of the people who are following this most closely are endorsing this idea.
Yeah. So the problem is that Planet X, the so-called Planet X, which is also known as Nibiru, which he believes will pass Earth on September 23rd, causing volcanic eruptions.
So wait, Planet X, which there's a moment of, right, we're taking a step there. Then
to Planet X.
Then the Planet X, he thinks it's passing at that time.
This is according to a Christian numerologist, David Mead.
The David Mead?
Yeah, the David Mead.
Why didn't you lead with that?
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I thought everybody knew. So anyway, he says the solar eclipse, the hurricanes in the United States, Harvey and Irma, are the warning signs that are spoken about in the scriptures. And here they are. Ready? These are the warning signs that we have been waiting for. And we're experiencing them right now. We're 4 days away from the fundamental transformation of Earth.
Of Earth, yes.
Okay. There will be signs in the sun, moon, and stars. On the earth, nations will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and tossing of the sea. People will faint from terror, apprehensive of what is coming on the world, for heavenly bodies will be shaken, men's hearts failing them for fear, and looking after those things which are coming to earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken.
So we have most of those. I mean, that's pretty much all. Let's go. I mean, if you go one
by one.
I mean,
we're in anguish from the roaring and the tossing of the seas.
Yes.
I don't.
Yes. Clearly, we had hurricanes. That's never
may
happened.
I just say,
never.
May I just say, then I have really good news for you. I have really, really fantastic news for you. You know how the Book of Revelation seems really scary?
It does seem kind of
right.
Scary.
Right, always has. Mm-hmm. Hear me out. I have a theory. It's not as, you know, I'm not, what's his name?
David Mead. You have to look that up.
I know, but I'm not David Mead, but I am a thinker. So hear this out. It always sounds really scary. Like, you know, when they say warning signs of the apocalypse, just the apocalypse sounds pretty bad. The earth will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and the tossing of the sea.
What? I'm not. I mean, it's bad, but it's not so bad.
It's the roaring and the tossing of sea, particularly in the last couple of weeks, has been very bad.
Yeah, but I'm not. My heart is not about to faint from the roaring and the tossing of the seas. I can't say that I'm about to, quote, faint from terror. Are you?
I mean, maybe not over that, but people are. You've raised millions of dollars to help this. There obviously are people dealing with it.
So
and
let me just
you will faint from terror from like looking at stairs.
Let me.
There are reasons you're fainting.
Yes. Okay. So, but let me phrase it this way. Have you ever gone to a movie where everybody has hyped it for so long, and you're like, it's not that great?
Like episode one of Star Wars. Right?
No, because that was bad.
Oh, okay.
No, it still has to be a pretty good movie. It's one of those movies you go to and everybody has said has been so great and you've heard so much about it. And then you go and you're like, I don't know, it was okay. And it's still a good movie, but what wrecked it was everybody was hyping it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a possibility that if this is what is supposed to make us faint from the tossing of the seas, these two hurricanes and a third one coming, if this is what's supposed to make us faint, then this thing's been hyped for 2,000 years, and we're going to get to the other side of it, and Jesus is going to be here, and we're going to be like, really wasn't that bad. Problem is, everybody was hyping this.
Well, as a, it's not, I mean, it was a big hurricane, but as an apocalypse, I don't know that it was, you know, you have to have, when you're talking apocalypse, you have high expectations. You have high expectations when it comes to that.
Now, this sound may make me faint from terror if I lived in Japan. This is the sound of North Korea setting off a missile headed for Japan, and the air raid sirens go off in Japan. That's what they've been hearing. That means there has been a missile launch. It's headed our way. Imagine, because you've only got, what, a couple of minutes? Imagine what that must feel like. That one is a little bit more, you know, men's hearts will fail them, to me. Now, the president is at the UN today. Yesterday, when pressed about, you know, the nuclear ambitions, Mattis said yesterday in a press conference that he was asked if there's any military options for dealing with North Korea to protect Seoul. And he said, yes, there are, but I'm not going to go into details. When asked if they might include use of lethal force, he said, I don't want to go into that. But if such military options do exist, they're largely new to analysts studying the Korean Peninsula. He then says that it may actually, by striking North Korea, it could spare our allies.
May
is kind of a, that's kind of a important thing.
Maybe he's thinking of breaking up with South Korea. Like, he's, you know what, we were allies for a long time, we had a good run.
Right.
Honestly, but, like, you're a little naggy,
yeah.
You keep going through my phone.
Right.
I think it's time to break up.
Yeah.
We break up, then it won't hit our allies.
So here's the thing that is, I think, the important story of the day. Yes, yes, the North Korean missile siren, yada, 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 yada. Yes, Saturday may be the end of the world. Got it. But California is really on. California, late last year, someone, and I want to make sure that I say someone named Star began thinking that it was time for a legal name change. I'm thinking, you know, sure, Teresa might be good.
Mm-hmm. Sally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Star has been going by that name for 2 years, since coming out at the age of 15 to friends and family as a, what? What do you think?
As a, I don't think.
Come on, say it with me. Non-binary. Yes.
Yes.
Non-binary.
Okay, good. I was worried. I was going to say non-binary.
Yeah.
And I was worried you were going to go somewhere
else. At 15 years old, Star decided that she is neither a woman nor a man, and would not choose the pronouns him or her. She was a non-binary. And so she wanted a plural non-gendered pronoun for her, and she wanted the state to do that. And so by the time she was 17, the article says, stretching to her adulthood, she had confronted all of the tedious paperwork in California. Who knew there was even paperwork to be filled out if you wanted to register as a non-binary? But she had her driver's license with the wrong name on it. Then she began applying to colleges, also under the wrong name, and it was a problem. And mostly because Star really liked to follow the rules. And yet every time she had to fill out an official form, she, Star, felt fraudulent, writing down a name she barely recognized on the rare occasion that she ever heard her name said out loud. She's Star.
I love how the same people who build a giant bureaucracy in which every minor thing involves hours of paperwork, then complain to us
about
that they have to fill out too much paperwork.
Yeah.
I love that.
Non-binary is a relatively unknown term, sure, for bigots, and non-binary Americans struggle to be taken seriously. I don't think that's my problem. I don't think that is my problem. Their identities are questioned. They're told they're either male or female, and there's nothing in the middle. Yep.
That was the way it was.
I think I'm going to continue to go there.
It almost feels like they're just like they're changing this word into something else. Like gender, like you know how the word gay used to mean happy, and then it became an alternative lifestyle, as they used to say.
Right. I'm not sure if you can.
I don't think you can say that anymore.
Yeah.
But it changed meanings, right? It just became another thing, and it feels like that's what gender is going on. Like I heard Ellen DeGeneres. Yeah. One time, explain the whole transgender thing as what you feel like in your head. And I'm not saying
something different.
Right. Like, I'm not saying there isn't a word to describe what you feel like in your head.
Right.
Like, that might be an important thing to come up with a word for. But gender already had a meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to figure out what someone feels like in their head,
yeah.
we can all come together and come up with some way to describe your head feelings.
Yeah. But and sometimes it matches and sometimes it doesn't. For instance, the feeling I have in my head is fat. And currently that does kind of fit.
Fact check. Mostly true.
Mostly true. But that doesn't make me less of a man or a woman. And now I could feel like a fat woman, but that isn't necessarily true. That's how I feel. We are in this weird era where facts, like, I don't know, the missile coming across the sky is kind of something that, I don't know, non-binary. Now, that's something that we really need to discuss. When you are in a place, again, I said this yesterday, I'm going to bring you the news that we're not as bad off as everyone. We're not as oppressed. We're not as poor. We're not as broken. We're just not. Because if while missiles are crossing our horizon, while all of these huge problems are happening, if the big thing we struggle with is I'm neither male or female, I'm binary, we have one sweet life. If you're a gun owner, like I am, the best thing you can do for yourself and your family is to educate yourself. The U.S. Concealed Carry Association wants to help you with their 2017 Concealed and Carry Family Defense Guide. This guide is really amazing. I have to bring mine in tomorrow or something. I have to show it to you. It will show you everything that you need. How to detect attackers before they see you. How to survive a mass shooting. If you have kids in college, I hate to say this, but that is something that they should be taught. That's something that everybody should know. How do you survive a mass shooting? Holy cow. There is research on it, and there's simple steps. How to responsibly own and store a gun, and a whole lot more. There's 164 pages. It comes with a bonus audio version, so you can listen to it in your car, and it's 100% free. Now, for a limited time, you'll also get a bonus home defense checklist, but you need to go to protectanddefend.com. Right now, 100% free instant access. That's protectanddefend.com, protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
There's a revolution going on right now, and most people don't even know that they're fighting it. They don't even know that it is happening right in front of them, and it is a tech revolution, but it's a revolution to control your mind, to control your time. Most websites are built to keep you on the website. The longer they can keep you on the website, the more money they make. And so everybody is trying to come up with ways to keep you on their website. This is something that is that I've been really wrestling with lately, because I'm trying to design something that is the exact opposite. I'm trying to feed you and get you to go. Just try to give you the most information, the information that you're looking for, without any of the hyperbole, without anything that you don't want. And everybody keeps telling me you're going to destroy the business. Well, there is a guy from Google who's an ethicist who has been working on this problem, and it's fascinating. He's coming up in about 30 minutes.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I was on my way back from a speaking engagement at the Nantucket Project over the weekend, and Dwayne had posted a comment on my Facebook page. He said, "Your program over the last couple of weeks has pushed me out of my comfort zone like you can't imagine. I'm literally writing to you from a bus on the way to Houston to help those who have been devastated by Hurricane Harvey. I'm a father of four in my mid-40s from Ohio. Like most, I go to work every day. I have homework, sports in the evenings with my kids, and if I'm lucky, maybe a couple of hours of night to myself. I'm thankful that there are some who are actually well on the path of knowing what matters. They are the ones who organized this trip, donated items and monies, and even asked for students to write letters. I'm hopeful that in my effort to help those in Texas, I will also come to recognize what matters most, so I may teach my children and encourage them to do the same." Dwayne is with us now. You're in Houston, Dwayne?
I am, Glenn. Thank you for having me on the show. It's a privilege.
Sure. Now, Dwayne, you wrote, and this is what caught my eye. You said something that I feel like my life doesn't have any real meaning. What did that feel like to you? What do you mean by that?
I feel like it's repetitious. I feel like you just go about your day. You do your daily routine, and you know, it seems to be very much the same in our life. It's very organized. My wife is very organized about what she does. So, you know, we do our daily routine, we do our work, and we make money, but for what purpose? At the end of the day, when I go to bed, what did I really do? What did I really do to change anything other than my own situation?
Dwayne, is this a new feeling for you? When did it start happening? When did you notice it?
You know, honestly, I've had it for a couple years. And I don't know what brought it on. I think it just maybe my age, you know, as you get older. But I think I dispelled that, you know, maybe this week, because a lot of the folks I'm serving with here are millennials. So I don't know that age is a factor. It's just, I don't know. I just started feeling that way. Maybe I stopped being selfish.
I'm wondering because I feel this way, and it's what I'm searching for as well, and I have found it across all age groups, and I'm just wondering if we're all kind of feeling the same thing, and what's causing it, other than in my life. I think it's as I get older, I'm looking at, well, what everything I'm creating, it's like, if what is the point? What is the point of it? And
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I wanted to relate that when I was a kid, everybody in my neighborhood, we had 60 houses, knew everybody else. And so when something was needed, people helped. My dad would go out and help people all the time for, you know, the lady next door whose water heater was out. Nowadays, we don't even know our neighbors. So, you know, and I think maybe my dad, and I'm speaking for him, I think maybe he found meaning in helping others more than just himself, right? He goes to work to help the family. That's kind of his duty. But what is his meaning? Maybe that's helping others in the neighborhood. And I think we've lost that as a community. And I don't, and you know, my dad was a church-going man, but I don't remember serving with church. But what's cool about this is I just started going to my church recently, and I see that I think people need to go to their church, whatever that church might be. And if that church is one of service, that may be where they get plugged in.
What if your church is telling you that the end of the world is coming on Saturday? Should you still go to that church?
I don't know if churches are saying
probably
that.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I'm hoping they don't have any type of tennis shoes I got to wear.
That's right. So Dwayne, you're a listener of my program for a long time, or?
15 years.
For about 15
and
years.
And I'll tell you what, much to my wife's chagrin. At dinner? No, she would love you, Glenn, if she ever listened to you, but she doesn't like anything to do with politics, and I think she's very typical of a lot of people in America.
Sure.
They're done with politics. They don't like it. They don't want to deal with it.
Well, that's kind of...
It's funny because I have a 21-year-old son who we talk about Glenn at dinner. My wife is... Well, he'll say, oh, did you hear Glenn today? And we'll start talking about it. And she's like, it's like you're on a first-name basis with this guy.
Well, we are. So Dwayne, what I wanted to ask you, I guess, was do you think any of this was pushed you this direction because of politics and because you've kind of been immersed in it and you thought that that had some meaning and you realized, no, not so much. Uh-uh.
Yeah, I mean, the politics, yeah, absolutely. Politics, to me, have taken a back, you know, kind of the back door now. The back burner. I don't even... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm done with politics myself from any political party standpoint. I feel more like I need to just take action. And that doesn't mean standing in the streets and protesting. For me personally, it means going and serving. And I can tell you I've learned more down here in one day about service to others and people just surviving a situation. It's bad down here. They're going to need help down here for a long time. I had to stop 2 hours in, and I just looked around and I said, I asked the team leader, I'm like, how long are you planning on being here? This is like months and months and months, if not years of work. And so I hope that, you know, the news cycle shoves Houston to the back burner too. And once it gets out of the news cycle, I hope people still sign up and volunteer to serve here in Houston, because it's certainly needed.
Yeah, they need people. They need people probably more than they did at the very beginning. People are still just getting back into their neighborhoods. How did you, when you, Dwayne, you said things kept coming up and kept saying, no, don't go. You signed up to go with Samaritan's Purse. And then everything kept coming up and was trying to convince you not to go.
Yeah.
What?
I signed up through my church. Originally, we weren't with Samaritan's Purse. Our bus that we got to take us down here, we could not find a bus. All of a sudden, a bus opened up for the exact week we wanted to go. We got the bus at a discount. Somehow, we lost our host church. They had to pull out due to some regulation or something relative to the sites they were visiting. Then Samaritan's Purse rescued us within the last 36 hours before the trip. And brought us down here to Pearland, Texas. And the outfit here at Samaritan's Purse, I've never seen a more organized outfit in my life.
They are really good. They are really
phenomenal.
Good. So, Dwayne...
And the impact you make is 100% impact because they are on top of it.
So,
everybody's working.
When you are... When you were getting ready to go, you said... Everything was stacked against me. I almost didn't go a million times. What kept you in the flow to go? I'm looking for those things in my own life. What are the things that kept you going?
Was every time I make an excuse, one would be taken away. I would say, oh, well, work. Work said, not a problem, Dwayne. You want to serve? Go serve. We want you to serve. Phenomenal. And I would say, well, the kids and this, and my son's got a broken pinky finger and surgery, and my wife's like, I got this. Go serve, you know what I mean? And we've got this person to help out, and our church family, our new church family is helping out. And then I get in my car, and I never listen to religious radio. And for some reason, I flip it on, and it just, the songs that I'm hearing tell me to go. And then when I was about to back out, you started talking about meaning and finding your meaning, finding what matters. And you drove that, I think, seemed like two shows to me. But... And that was it. I mean,
it seemed like 10 for other people.
I loved it.
Dwayne, what a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you so much for lifting up my spirits and posting what you did yesterday and going down and actually serving in Houston. Thank you so much.
I love how he says Samaritan's Purse is buttoned up. They're doing everything right. They're dealing with Ebola around the world. Of course, yes, they make sure.
The only ones that did.
Yeah, they really were the only ones who did that. Samaritanspurse.org if you want to get involved there. Also, TeamRubiconUSA.org is another organization we've been working with, and they've been doing a great, great job.
Can you help me out on the Paris climate deal? We're in, we're out. I'm not sure. I think Donald Trump has set this up to win no matter what happens. And I mean, it's
That's
brilliant.
What he does. You know, he's sick of the winning.
No. See, it's brilliant the way it's done, mm-hmm. except I'm not sure who actually is going to win. For instance, I thought we got out of it. And so all of the Republicans and conservatives were like, yay, he got us out of the Paris Treaty.
Including me, by the way.
Me too. Me too.
We praised him a lot.
A lot. Mm-hmm. Loved that. Thank you for that. That is a great thing you've just done. Now, the Europeans are all circling because if the United States pulls out, it's over. So now he's going and saying, well, okay, well, maybe there's some things that we can do to get us back into it. No, no, we don't want back into it. And so if he goes back in, was this just a negotiation? Is that the right thing for conservatives?
That one I can help you with. No.
Yes, thank you.
Because I don't want a better deal on the Paris Climate Accord, which, by the way, even with the deal that they have, even if all the science is right, does nothing, does absolutely nothing to change the climate, even if Al Gore's science is perfect. You're talking about the thing they keep saying, well, we could reverse some of these temperature gains. That what they're talking about there is a separate accord that does 90 times what this one does. So it does absolutely nothing except just sell off your sovereignty and your ability.
We're getting mixed messages because that's what he's supposedly talking about at the United Nations today is sovereignty, individual sovereignty, which is a speech I would like to hear from the president, any president. I would love to hear that at the United Nations. I applaud individual sovereignty. However, at the same time he's saying that, he's sending the message to Europe, then maybe we can horse trade here. Yeah, I'm wondering if we've all been played.
Look, there is no negotiation to a good deal in Paris. The deal in Paris is nothing. You should have no deal whatsoever. If he's actually trying to negotiate something, that's really awful. However, there's an argument to be made that maybe he's using this as a chip for something else. And if that's the case, fine. Right? Like, if you want to, I'm not saying you go back into it. I'm saying if you want to use it as a negotiating tactic that you're eventually going to take off the table, I guess you can do those sorts of things.
Well, I wish I had confidence. I mean, I've been hearing this. I think what's really happening is X, Y, and Z. We've been hearing that since John Roberts in the Supreme Court.
I'm sick of making excuses. Just do what you're doing.
Just say what you're doing. Just get it done. And tell me what you actually believe. The Paris Accord is either a loss of sovereignty and a bad deal, or it's not. Do you want to be slowly poisoned or just quickly poisoned? No, I opt out. I don't want any poison. Thank you.
But what if the world really wants you to be poisoned?
Well, then the world will probably poison me. Oh my gosh. I think they're slowly poisoning him in his Diet Coke at night.
I heard that on InfoWars.
I heard that, so you know it must be true. Traveling can be a hassle. The flights, the hotels, rental cars can be a little overwhelming. The average person spends, I don't even know what it is, 87 minutes or something like that. Upside is trying to get that 87 minutes that you are spending online trying to find the hotels and compare and contrast. They're trying to get that down to, I believe it's 3 is the number that they want. That's kind of a
paradise.
Yeah.
I'm one of those idiots that used to hop around to every single site. And then I would start questioning myself and my own judgment of whether I booked the right thing. And then I'd go through that buyer's remorse. After you'd book it, you'd find another flight that was at a better time for less.
This is the thing that Upside is trying to do. They're trying to fill you with the confidence that you can trust that the way they've put this thing together, to where you are putting your travel together and your hotels together and you're bundling everything together, you're never going to get a better deal. And the biggest thing in bringing that time down is making sure people understand, compare. Go ahead. Look, you're not going to find a better deal. And as soon as people start to trust that Upside is giving you that best deal, that time is going to go through the floor. But they've already shaved tens of minutes off of this. This is going to be the easiest way for you to book a travel.
Plus, you get free stuff.
It's exactly right. Mm-hmm. They have navigators. These are the specialists that actually will help you find the thing that you're looking for.
And you get free stuff.
Customer had a flight that they were, it was delayed for 2 hours. Navigator arranged to have complimentary access to the executive lounge to pass the time. These are the kinds of things that Upside is going to do for you. And on top of it, as Stu said, they give you free stuff. If you go to upside.com and you use the promo code Beck, when you book your next business travel, your company is going to save a buttload of money and you're going to get a minimum $100 gift card to Amazon.com. So what is it you've been saving for? What is it that you want to buy from Amazon? You get a $100 gift card from Amazon just for booking your next trip at upside.com. You're looking for a business travel done easily and save a lot of money and make money? You deserve a better business trip. Minimum purchase is required. See site for details. It's upside.com, promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
The hurricane in Miami is pretty interesting in that, you know, they had all this power is out everywhere. And you think, well, there's so much new solar power. Why don't they just use that? Listen to this. This power company rules and lobbying have made it impossible across Florida to buy a solar panel and power your individual home with it. You are instead legally mandated to connect your panels to your local electric grid.
Yep.
More egregious, FPL, the power company, mandates that if the power goes out, your solar power system must power down along with the rest of the grid, robbing potentially needy people of power during major outages. They talk about how this is supposedly to protect people who are working on the grid, because if there's energy going through it, they could have problems. However, the state rules also mandate that solar customers include a switch that cleanly disconnects their panels from the grid while keeping the rest of a power home's lines connected. But during a disaster like Irma, FPL customers aren't allowed to flip the switch and turn on the solar power in their homes because of all these ridiculous government rules.
This is the way to just keep solar power. I mean, why are you mandated to pump power back into Florida Lightning Power? That is crazy talk. That is crazy talk. If I have extra juice that I'm not using, I have no problem taking that power and throwing it into the grid. I have no problem sharing it. But I'm going to put a panel on my roof, and then I have to go power a private institution, and they take away my right? Screw you, man. No.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
If you live by lawlessness, you are going to die by it. And that is the double-edged sword that first the Democrats are starting to be cut by, but the Republicans will be cut by it just the same. Nancy Pelosi experienced it firsthand yesterday, Dreamer press conference in San Francisco. She looked helpless and even a little bit scared as pro-immigration activists shouted her down using the same tactics that Occupy Wall Street used on conservatives just a few years ago.
Mic check!
Mic check!
Mic
check!
Mic check! We are immigrant youth!
We are immigrant youth!
Undocumented and unafraid!
Undocumented!
So how did Pelosi not see this coming? When the Democrats used hurricane relief funding as a ransom for a budget deal, hardly anybody on the left even batted an eye. But now they've done basically the same thing with DACA, and they've shelled it to pursue legislation that has already failed. In other words, they're holding it ransom while they watch the political fallout from another failed bill. We have to ask ourselves, both left and right, does anybody who actually believes in open borders and mass amnesty still think the Democrats care about DACA and children? No, it's about power and it's about money. Does anybody on the right actually believe that the Republicans still actually care about border security? And when it comes to health care, freedom of choice and small government? No, it's about money and power. We are going to wake up to some real problems if we don't start focusing on things that matter and start telling the truth. Trump, Schumer, Pelosi, they're all making deals. The problem is they're bad for both sides. Vast majority of those on both the left and the right want real, lasting change. What happens when everybody in the country that wants change has 4 to 8 more years of the status quo? We just keep switching seats, switching sides of the argument, but nothing is changing. Maybe the better question is, who is going to eventually rise up that isn't rising up on violence or hatred? Who is it that is going to rise up and promise something different, promise a true choice, true freedom, and real peace and prosperity?
It's Tuesday, September 19th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I have been wrestling with something for the last 6 months or so because I'm quite honestly, I'm disgusted by the things that I have built. And I don't think it has a lasting value. And I would hope that others are thinking the same thing. But as I go and I speak to media executives, they're not. They recognize the same thing, but they're not willing to do the things that might hurt them. And in some ways, I understand they have shareholders, et cetera, et cetera. But at some point, we all have to try to do the right thing. Right now, almost everything in our life was supposed to make our life easier. It was supposed to make it less chaotic. We were supposed to have access to more information, communicate easier. I cannot be alone. My life is more complex than ever before. I can't handle all of it. And now I'm getting to the point. Last night, my wife, we were working on a letter last night together, and the kids came in and were just asking stuff. And normally it's the other way. Normally I'm doing the typing. She was typing last night, and she was so bogged down on things. And the kids came in and she went, "Oh, kids, stop for a second." And I just looked at her and I said, oh my gosh, I recognize that person. I think everybody is like that. And websites now and technology, people who are shaping our future are doing things to keep us into that matrix as long as they possibly can. Tristan Harris, he is the founder of Time Well Spent. He's a former Google design ethicist. Gave a great talk on how do we change this. Tristan, how are you?
Glenn, it's great to be here. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
So I'm so happy to see that I'm not the only one feeling this way and not the only one trying to figure a way out. But it's almost impossible, at least at my level, to even talk to people who are thinking this way. No, I want to design the website in a way that it gets people back to their own life faster.
Right. Yeah, completely. Well, I have to say, Glenn, I was also really moved by your interview with Dave Rubin, talking about how the race for attention when you were on television and the race for good ratings affected, you know, your own life. And I think this is the thing people miss about the tech industry, is that no matter what good intentions Facebook, Google, you know, Snapchat has to improve people's lives, they're caught in this race for attention. And as I said in the TED Talk, and as you know so well, it's this race to the bottom of the brainstem for whatever works at getting attention. And there's no escaping that, because there's only so much attention. There's only so much time in people's lives, only so many hours in a day. And it's not growing, you know, so the race is only going to get more competitive. And as it gets more competitive, it becomes this race for figuring out what pushes the buttons in people's brains. And so we have to get out of this race for attention. And like you said, you can't ask anyone who's in the attention economy to not do what they're doing. You can't tell YouTube, hey, stop getting so much of people's attention. You can't tell Facebook, hey, stop making your product so addictive. You can't tell Snapchat, hey, stop manipulating the minds of teenagers to get them sending messages back and forth and hooking them, because they're all caught in this race for attention, which is why we need to reform the system one level up. You have to go outside the system. And I'd love to talk to you about that.
So what does that even mean? How do you go outside of the, go one level up? What is one level up?
Well, it's sort of like, you know, the tragedy of the commons. So you can't ask any one of the actors to do something different than what they're doing. They need to be able to coordinate, you know, their race for attention. So, you know, one way to go one level up is to go to the government, which is not very pleasant as an idea. Another way to go one level up is actually to go to Apple. So Apple is kind of like the government of the attention economy, because they create the device upon which everyone else is competing for attention. And Google is also sort of a mini government of the attention economy, because they create kind of the government of who gets the best results when you search for something. And Facebook's kind of the government of the attention economy too, because they choose who's at the top of your feed. And currently they're locked into their own race for attention. So one of the things is we have to decouple profit from attention, because so long as those two things are you know, one-to-one connected, it becomes this race to the bottom. And we actually did this with energy, where there's only so much energy available to sell people. And energy companies used to have this incentive of, I make more money the more energy you use. So I actually want you to, you know, leave the lights on, leave the faucets on. And, you know, that created a problem where you know, we waste more energy we waste, or we pollute the environment, the more money the companies make. And in the U.S., we went through a change called decoupling, which decoupled through a little bit of self-regulation among the energy companies, where they basically capped how much money energy companies pocketed directly from the more energy people used. And then the remaining energy, when you use a lot of energy, all that extra energy, they priced it higher to disincentivize it. And then they actually used that extra profit not to capture it for themselves, but to collectively reinvest it into renewable energy infrastructure. And so I'm wondering whether or not something like that could happen for attention, where companies could profit from, you know, some amount of attention. We want that relationship to exist. But then beyond a certain point, what if everyone was reinvesting in the greater good of the attention economy? Because, you know, right now, 2 billion people's minds, from the moment they wake up in the morning, you know, they're jacked into this environment, this digital environment that's controlled by three technology companies like Apple, Google, and Facebook.
Tristan, and, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I mean, I'm really glad somebody is thinking about this, because I think about this stuff all the time and I don't hear anybody really talking about it. And it's a little hair raising, because what you're even saying, it starts to roll into the, you know, Big Brother, Brave New World. I mean, it could so easily go into, right. We're just in this weird place that I don't know if mankind has ever been in before, that if we don't do this right, we're really going to screw ourselves.
No, you know, you're so dialed into this, Glenn. You're totally right. And you know, I studied this for 3 or 4 years. I was a design ethicist at Google, where literally the way I spent every single day studying what does it mean to ethically steer people's attention. And it really, like you said, it's the Brave New World scenario combined with the Big Brother scenario. Because whether we want to admit it or not, you know, for, again, 2 billion people from the moment they wake up to every bathroom break, to every coffee line, to going to bed, to every back of the Uber or public transportation, you know, people are glued to their phones. We check them 150 times a day. And again, because of this race for attention, these technology products are not neutral. Each one is trying to do whatever it can to get attention. So they deploy these different persuasive techniques, and it becomes this, you know, amusing ourselves to death, you know, Brave New World scenario. If you've seen the movie WALL-E, it's like, you know, it's a race to to put people with a screen in front of their eyes for as many hours as possible, consuming for as much as possible, because that's what's most profitable. So it does start to resemble something like The Matrix. And I don't know if you know the book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, but in the beginning, Neil Postman, the author, contrasts Orwell's vision of the future, which we're all, you know, really ready to oppose because it's a form of tyranny we don't want, Big Brother. But then there is this subtler vision of Brave New World that people forget to oppose because there's no face of it. There's no Big Brother.
Yes.
And he has this great, great line that's, you know, Orwell was worried about a world where we would ban books. And it says Huxley was worried about a world where no one would want to read a book. You know, Orwell was worried about a world in which the truth would be concealed from us. Huxley was worried about a world where the truth would be drowned in a sea of irrelevance. And it, you know, it goes on, and the point
we're
is
that there.
The world that we're entering. Yeah,
we are there.
Tristan Harris is with us. Quickly, you had mentioned the manipulation that these companies do for your attention, and you had a really great example with Snapstreaks. I don't know Snapchat very well, but can you kind of explain that?
Absolutely, yeah. So one thing that I think everybody who uses a smartphone in a family is aware of is how this is affecting their kids, especially if they're teenagers. So Snapchat is the number one way that teenagers in the United States communicate. This is very important. So if you're, you know, like me, I'm 33, and you're an adult, you probably use text messaging as your number one way to communicate. So you live in text messaging, but imagine living in Snapchat. This is like your dominant way to communicate. And Snapchat figured out a way to hook kids called streaks. And what that means is they show a number next to every single person that you chat with. And that number is the number of days in a row that you've continually sent a streak, a message back and forth. So if you've sent a message back and forth 150 days in a row, it shows the number 150 with a fireball. And it might sound totally innocuous, but it actually causes kids to send all of these empty messages back and forth. They're literally sending photos.
Just not to break the speed, walls, it's a streak.
Just not to break the streak.
Wow.
And they give their password to five other friends when they go on vacation, just because they don't want to lose it. And so it's like tying two kids on a, you know, legs together on a treadmill, on two separate treadmills, and then hitting start and watching them run like chickens with their heads cut off, passing the football back and forth, just so they don't drop the streak. And this is, by the way, you know, from a playbook of persuasive techniques that people in the industry know are good at getting people to do things. And you can use it for good. Like you could set up a streak for the number of days to the gym that you've, you know, the number of days you read five pages in a book, that you wanted to make sure you do that habit so you keep up a streak. It's a powerful motivator. But what they did is they took this powerful technique and then they applied it to a vulnerable population and they applied it to children's sense of belonging with each other, because now kids define the terms of their friendship based on whether or not they have a streak or not. It becomes the currency of their friendship. And so that's what's new about this. People often say, you know, back in the 1970s, you know, we were used to gossip on the telephone all the time. And now if I look at my teenage kids, they're just gossiping on the telephone a different way with Snapchat. There's nothing new or alarming here. And what's different about this is that your phone in the 1970s didn't have thousands of engineers on the other side of the screen who knew how to kind of strategically tap two people on the shoulder and make them feel like they're missing out on each other's lives, and to show you, you know, to have the phone like light up and appear in your life exactly when you're most vulnerable. I mean, for example, it's never been easier to find out that you're missing out on what your friends are doing if you're a teenager. You know, Snapchat or Instagram benefit if they put that at the top of the feed, not at the bottom. In the same way that Facebook benefits by putting out outrageous news at the top of the newsfeed because it's better at getting attention. And so go ahead.
No, please finish.
Well, so as you said, I don't want to be here dwelling on the problem. I first want to do this because it's important people understand the problem.
Yeah.
And it's honestly one of the biggest problems of our time because it's infrastructure for solving every other problem. You know, every other problem, healthcare, climate change, all these things require, you know, us to be able to sustain attention and talk about a complex topic. And with if we're just running around distracted all the time, and if the entire next generation is hooked and addicted to their devices, and it's we can't, you know, we don't develop the capacity for patience or complexity or sitting with each other. Sometimes that's uncomfortable.
Right.
You know, it's a delicate thing to be a human being.
So Tristan Harris is the founder of Time Well Spent, former Google design ethicist, fascinating guy. And we'll come back and talk a little bit about what do we do? What do we do? We have a resilient country right now. Our sponsor is Goldline. But right now, we're experiencing a ton of pressure points. And you may not know it, but right now, there are five specific threats to the economy. President Reagan's budget director, David Stockman, explains how you can identify them. I want to give you one stat. I was sitting at dinner on Saturday with a woman who is working on the banking system over in Africa, and it was truly exhilarating and terrifying at the same time, and what they're doing. And she said, just so you know, Glenn, the African Union, I'm quoting, African Union, 70% of the African Union was funded by the West. And over in the last 12 months, they've decided the West is becoming unstable. And now 0% is funded by the West. And they're voting to leave the dollar. She said it hasn't happened yet, but it's going to. The world is experiencing fundamental change. And it doesn't have to be bad. We just have to be aware and then spread our risk out. I'd like you to call for an exclusive report on the five fundamentals that Stockman is saying are in real trouble at 866-465-3546, 1-866-GOLDLINE. They have a gold protection, price protection program for as little as $2,500. You get 3 months of price protection. It goes down. They make it up in gold, all the way up to a year of price protection for an investment of $25,000. Make sure you read their important risk information and find out if it's right for you. It's not right for everybody. It is for my family. 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. Goldline or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Tristan Harris, founder of Time Well Spent, former Google design ethicist. He's agreed to stay with us for a few minutes longer to the end of the hour. And we only have about a minute here, Tristan. So let me set the next half hour up with just this question. Are you, how confident are you that we make this next turn over the next 50 years as a species and come out the other side better off?
Yeah, well, that's a very big question. I see it as we know that we cannot survive on the current track that we're on, so we need to change course. That much is clear. And that's why I've decided just to work on this full time. We have to reform this fundamental way that technology is shaping our lives. I think it's one of the number one determinants of culture.
I agree.
And the contents of people's minds every day. I mean, again, 2 billion people's minds every single day use Facebook. That's more than the number of followers of Christianity. 1.5 billion a day on YouTube is more than the number of followers of Islam. So, you know, that these companies would not be accountable to the societal values we want.
Back in a minute.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
The world changed during the Industrial Revolution in about a 100-year period. I have been saying for almost 15 years now that we're going to pass a threshold and you're going to see the Industrial Revolution happen in about a 10-year period where you will not recognize the way the world is structured, you know, 10 years from now. And I think we're either at that threshold or about to cross into that threshold to where everything is being redesigned and changed. And we all have to participate in this. There's no spectator sport on this one. And I'm very concerned that especially in the media, they're playing the old games and it is truly the race for the bottom. Tristan Harris is the founder of Time Well Spent, former Google design ethicist, and this is the kind of stuff that he is working on how to get people to A, recognize the problem, and B, companies to say, wait a minute, I have responsibility here and we should be thinking these things through. Tristan, I have talked to leaders from the left and the right, you know, all the way from the Huffington Post you know, and AOL to the Wall Street Journal and Fox. And most of them don't understand what I'm even talking about. But those who do feel like they're trapped and they can't change it because it affects their traffic. And we are trying to redesign. I'm trying to break the mold. And every single thing I suggest, my my product team says, you're going to hurt traffic. You're going to hurt traffic. And I'm trying to balance of how do I do the right thing and not play this game and still survive?
Yeah. Well, that's why it's such a good question. I'm so glad conversation because, you know, like I said, you can't ask anyone who's got, you know, a direct access to people's minds to say, hey, don't put the shiny stuff, the outrage stuff, the news, subscribe to my newsletter at the top of the website, right? Everyone's in this race to capture attention. So you can't, you, with your website, you can't just change what you're doing because it'll mean you get less profit.
Okay, so, I want to make sure I understand you because you're not asking me. I'm asking you. I want to do this. I would rather be out of business than to aid our demise. So I'm asking you, is there a way that an individual can do this and make a difference?
I think there's small things that you can do. You can choose to, you know, batch and digest your newsletters. A good example, this is less what you can do, is something that Facebook could do. Facebook wants to drip out notifications one by one because that actually makes it feel more like a slot machine. Same thing with Instagram and likes, you know, instead of just saying at the end of the day, hey, here's what changed. Here's what you've got. Instead of that, that's going to work, you know, not as well as dripping them out one by one, just to make it more like a slot machine, just dripping out the dopamine. And, you know, so one, there's some small things that companies can do or that you can do with your website. One example, again, is to batch and deliver this one digest at the end of the day versus the dripping things out. That's something that big social media companies can do. But again, that will mean that they're going to be a little bit less successful in terms of their traffic. But if they all decided to do that, then we'd actually be, you know, in a better place. And so that's why it's like, can we talk together? Can we get the media industry together to talk about what are the standards we want to have about the way we write headlines or the rules that we use about the photos that we try to put? You know, everyone wants to put the photo next to the article that's of, you know, the most surprising or outrageous photo of Mitch McConnell or of Trump with a big, you know, surprise on his face, you know, whatever is going to make it seem most engaging. And we need to, you know, get people together to say, what are the rules that we would all be happier as a society and as a media industry to live by? That's one thing, is that right now we have to be able to acknowledge that the human mind, you know, we came from this long process of evolved instincts. And so there's certain things that always appeal to us. The fear of missing out is very powerful. The need to belong is very powerful. So when Snapchat manipulates that has an influence on us. So instead we need to say, these are the worst demons of our nature. What does it mean to appeal to the angels of our nature? And how can we create some standards around that? So one way is to have the tech companies get together and to self-regulate themselves by asking, what are the standards for all of our practices? It's sort of like building codes or building standards for buildings. You know, I could build a building with some bad materials, but it'll hurt society. It'll be more economically efficient to do that. But we'd all be better off if we paid a little bit higher price. And these companies are richer than God. I mean, these are really profitable companies that can afford to reinvest in better infrastructure. That's why the conversation is how we can reform the tech industry.
See, I don't know what your political leaning is, and I don't care, and I don't want to get into it. But as a libertarian, I agree with you. And at the same time, I'm spooked to hell by that. I mean, I agree. You know, it's just we're in this place now to where I don't know what else to do. And I think we're, I know you are, obviously, but I think this conversation is way ahead of the curve for the average person. By the time the average person really gets here, the wave is crashing on the beach. Can I switch the conversation a little bit to,
yes,
as a parent, what do I need to know as a parent, or, you know, because people just think, oh, my kids can X, Y, Z. An interesting story. My son-in-law for Christmas, his mother's Christmas present to the kids was take them to a horror movie every Christmas. They didn't really celebrate Christmas. And so they would go to this horror movie. And he is a kid. He's like spooked like crazy now. And he was telling me, we were talking about It. And he said, Glenn, my mother made me watch that when I was so small that when I actually saw it later in life, I thought it was a dream. I thought that was my life. I thought I was Georgie, the kid chasing the deer. And we as adults just think, oh, our kids can handle it. There's so much going on even in the adult, in the head of an adult now with technology. What should we know?
Yeah, well, for parents, I mean, I think it's challenging. I went to a conference on children and screens, and one of the things that came up is we worry about the kids, but sometimes the thing that came up was how kids want their parents to stop using their devices so much, you know, because there's something called the still face syndrome, where when a child is very young, they make eye contact with their parent, they need that parent to, you know, emote back to them, to open their eyes and smile and use their face to really expressively see that they're being seen. And when the kid, you know, as an infant is looking at the adult's face, and the adult's face is sucked hypnotically into the screen with a totally still flat face, it's doing something to the development of children. Children need to get that feedback. And so one thing is, what can we as adults do? One thing that's really easy, that's super trivial, is just to turn off all notifications on your phone. Because what most people don't realize is that many notifications are invented by machines at technology companies to try and lure you back. So if it says that, hey, these five friends liked your photo, it feels like that was your five friends who sent you that notification because it was their action that led to it. But it's actually not true. It's the technology companies are trying to harvest new reasons to seduce you back into the app. Go ahead.
Did you go out on your own because you were both intellectually thrilled at what was happening or could happen, and horrified at being a part of it as well?
Yeah, well, I was a part of the tech industry for a long time, and, you know, my friends in college started Instagram. We both studied at this lab at Stanford that taught people this intersection between technology and psychology. And I became really alarmed by, I think, you know, technology was less and less about actually adding up to this benefit to our lives, and more just kind of filling up our lives with things that work, you know, on getting our minds to do stuff. So I got into this work by, you know, a year into being at Google, making this memo before the Google diversity memo. And it was a memo about 5 years ago, about essentially how, you know, 20 to 35 year old engineer designers in San Francisco control what 2 billion people are thinking and doing every day when they make choices about how these screens work, and that we have a moral responsibility to do something about that. And to my surprise, I thought I was going to get fired, but actually it went viral throughout Google and was seen by about 10,000 people, and talked to the CEO about it. And that led to my work researching this question of how do you hold that responsibility if you're someone in a technology company and your choices will impact what 2 billion people are thinking every day. And so I started working on that framework, but I couldn't get some of the changes through. And frankly, as you said, we're you know, coming up fast on this brave new world, you know, situation that we don't want. It's clearly not good for us. It's not like we're going to sort of self-correct and we're just going to figure out how to live with these devices, as is commonly talked about. This is going to get more and more persuasive because it's personalized. and it's pulling on our social psychology. And so I knew that I needed to leave and create a public conversation and raise awareness first, but I also have a lot of ideas about what we can do. And so that's why I'm out here talking to you. I don't have a book. I'm not trying to sell something. I have no financial motivation. This is literally just a public a good conversation that I think you and I both know is so important.
Tristan, I can't thank you enough for coming on, because you don't have a reason to come on, other than to do good. And I hope that we can invite you back, because I have so many questions, and I think you have many of the answers. And I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Glenn. I'd be happy to come back.
Tristan Harris is a former Google design ethicist, and he's the founder of the organization Time Well Spent. Really fascinating conversation.
Jeez.
He has a really interesting thing about how menus on every website are designed to make you do special certain things. You don't ask questions as to why they're there.
Yeah, see if we can book him again in a couple of weeks or next week or whenever. Let's see if we can make him a regular just for a little while. Because I've read that thing about the menus.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's stunning.
Yeah.
When you read it, you're like, wait, holy cow, he is really pulling the curtain back and showing you, no. Everything is being done to get you sucked in and hold you there. And yep. It's going to, when with the development of AI, and on top of it, virtual reality, I'm telling you, the Matrix is coming if we don't wake up. And that's if we make it, if the news media continues to go down the road that we're all going down, and that is, I'm going to throw a fireball at you, and you're going to throw one back, and we're all going to get clicks. I'm telling you, revolution will come, and we may not have to worry about the tech problem.
The other thing is, it would be really expensive to get him to consult for us, but if he's on the air,
I mean,
we just ask him questions and answers him for
wrong.
Free.
That would be wrong. You know, and too.
I
haven't even thought of that one.
No, me neither. Right. That's why I didn't say it until right then.
Our crisis, whatever it is, the crisis that you have in your life, the crisis that we're all facing, it's not going to bring out a better version of you. You know this. How many times have you had to apologize because you're like, I am sorry, I'm under so much stress, blah, blah, blah. It just reveals what's already there, and usually reveals the worst of you unless you are prepared for it. So here we go. What is it, Maria, the hurricane that is coming now? So
Jose's up in the northeast. Maria, I think, is after that. Yeah, it's
Maria. Yeah. There are more hurricanes exploding in the Atlantic. Earthquakes in the Mountain West, possible volcanic activity. This is great. And we found out earlier today, September 23rd is the day the Earth is going to end. A lot of people believe that. So I'm not one of them. Anyway, signs are everywhere that things, you know, are going to get rough, and we'll make it through, and we'll make it through together, because we'll rise and be our best if we are prepared. My Patriot Supply can help you prepare. Get their 70-serving survival food kit now for only $67. Healthy food that lasts up to 25 years. For less than a dollar per serving, you're going to get breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Call 800-977-0542, or you can order online at preparewithglenn.com. A prepared America is a strong America. That's my Patriot Supply's mission. 800-977-0542 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I would, Sarah, if we have time, could you grab the audio? How artificial intelligence will affect your life? We're in a really exciting period of time, but the world will look back and study us and study our choices. And I am more convinced than ever that that what I have, I shouldn't say feared, but what I have worried about is going to come to pass, and we are going to be passengers on the road to hell if we don't wake up and say, wait, we want to steer. We want to steer.
These decisions are being made for us, and we're not really considering them at all.
Yeah, we're not. They're just washing over us.
It's one thing to vote for something bad.
Yeah.
It's another thing to have someone else vote for something bad, and you don't even realize they did it. And I feel like that's the situation we're in right now with technology.
It is. And we have to pay attention to that. But there's a lot going on. We're going to give you the recap of Donald Trump and what he said at the United Nations. Some pretty stark and amazing statements that he made. Some good, some stark and amazing. And Bill O'Reilly is joining us after the top of the hour.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
President Trump just got finished with his address to the United Nations. As expected, went strong in North Korea. Quote, if the righteous many don't confront the wicked few, then evil will triumph, end quote. That is a great line. But what happens if, from Trump's perspective, there's a lack of righteous many willing to step forward? Does that mean America is willing to go it alone? According to his speech today at the United Nations, it kind of sounds like it. He said a phrase that made my blood run a little chilly. That if the United States is, quote, forced to defend itself and its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Holy cow. What? Now, that is either a whole lot of bravado or this situation is on the verge of spiraling out of control. Yesterday, Defense Secretary Mattis said that kinetic military options that could ensure the safety of Seoul were viable and on the table. I'm curious. Is the survival of the South Korean capital the only thing holding Trump back here? Because we know that a nuclear-armed North Korea doesn't threaten South Korea. Kim Jong-un is not going to nuke Seoul with an ICBM. That's the threat the United States has to deal with. Perhaps the statement at the end of his speech was a hint to South Korea. He said, quote, in foreign affairs, we are renewing this founding principle of sovereignty. This is such a great line. As president, I will always put America first, just like you as leaders of your countries will always do. And you always should put your country first. All responsible leaders have an obligation to serve their own citizens. Our government's first duty is to its people, end quote. I'm not sure if we are nearing the end game in this standoff. I'm not sure. But I do know it's not making me more comfortable every day that goes by. Ultimately, it may come down to an outcome we have not seen since World War II. And if it does, the world changes dramatically overnight. Let us all pray that cooler heads will prevail.
It's Tuesday, September 19th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly has a new book out. Before we get into that, I just want to get his real quick take on the speech. If you had a chance to see it today, Bill, did you have a chance to watch it or listen to it at all?
Yeah, I saw it.
What'd you think?
Well, I thought it was okay. I mean, I don't think that the president made any friends there because that's not a body that likes authoritarian capitalism.
Yes.
So, you know, and then one of the telling moments was when he was excoriating, word of the day, excoriating, communism and socialism, and he paused. think he was waiting for a little applause. Stone silence. You know, it's like, yeah. Okay, this crew is not, you know, they're not type A Americans, yeah. And they're not.
Yeah.
On the North Korean thing, I do believe that the president is setting up some military action. I don't think it's going to be a catastrophic strike. It would be more like an in-the-middle strike. But if the guy doesn't stop shooting ICBMs at other countries, then one is going to go right up his nose. It's bound to happen. So Trump is trying to play the tough guy, not only to the UN, but to North Korea, to say, look, I'm not playing with you. Because everybody knew that Barack Obama would never do that, no matter what happened.
Yeah.
That's why I think the strategy.
The line, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea, is a little terrifying. Let's move to your book real quick. Your new book comes out, Killing England. It's out today. The Brutal Struggle for American Independence. And if you are a longtime listener of this program, you know that the importance of history, probably better than most audiences, and getting that history into not only your hands, but the hands of your children and your grandchildren is crucial. Bill has written a great book, Killing England, The Brutal Struggle for American Independence, where he is taking all of the founders and showing who they really, really are. I want to take you here to, I think it's page 158, where you're talking about Benjamin Franklin in Paris. And he realizes that he's going to end up living in France for a long time. And he takes up residence in a chateau. And at first that kind of bothers him, but he gets kind of used to it. And he becomes a very important person in France. Can you take me through that?
Sure. And then he wears a hat, the famous Franklin hat. The fur hat, and everybody in Paris starts to wear the hats, and they're selling them all over the place. Franklin made this arduous voyage across the Atlantic six times, and we take you through that voyage. When you see what these people had to go through just to get from America to Europe, it was amazing, the pain and suffering of the voyage itself. So then he's in Paris, and he's trying to convince the French to come into the side of the war and the Americans, and he finally did. But in the meantime, he's Hugh Hefner. He turns into Hugh Hefner. He's running around with all the French widows over there, having a great time, and he had a lot of leisure time because there's only so much time the king would give him to badger, send the French troops. So Franklin had a very, very interesting social life in Paris.
Bill, here in Dallas, they were talking yesterday. There was a story out that the Dallas Independent School District is thinking about dropping the name of Franklin. He was one of the...
I wanted to ask you about that, Beck. Is this real?
It's real.
In Dallas for 2 years.
It's real.
I can't imagine it.
It's real.
The school district, not only Benjamin Franklin, but Madison, Jefferson, and Washington.
I know.
And about changing the names of the school. For what reason?
Because slave owners. Shows they have absolutely no idea who Franklin in particular really was.
Yeah, Franklin didn't have slaves.
And not only didn't he have slaves, he was one of the first abolitionists. He was probably the most important abolitionist of his day.
Well, this is why Killing England is so vital, because the only people who can stop this are the folks locally. And you have to know who Jefferson, Washington, and Franklin really were as men. And we get into that in the book. But this is insane. In the Dallas that I worked in the 1970s, this never could have happened in a million years. What's next? The Alamo has to come down now? Is that what's next?
There are school districts here in Texas that you can't teach the Alamo because it's racially insensitive.
Oh, my God. This is madness.
Yeah.
And it's all over here in New York. They want to take down Columbus Circle. Columbus Day has already been knocked out in L.A. It's now Indigenous Peoples Day. And these morons out in L.A., they have no idea what the Indigenous peoples did to one another in their warfare. They enslaved the losing tribes. I mean, this is crazy stuff. So that I'm appealing to people not only to buy the book because you'll like it and have fun reading it, but because you need it to defend your communities against the PC far left brigades that are on the march.
You know,
and you know what the end, we talked about this on your show. You know what the end result here is, Beck, don't you?
Yeah, the fundamental transformation and destruction of the country and the Western way of life.
The Constitution. This is why all this is happening, so your listeners understand. After Trump got elected and they lost, the PC far left lost, they said, we have to fundamentally change the Constitution. So what are we going to do? We're going to brand it white supremacists. That's why you're hearing this. They're going to say this Constitution was forged by white supremacists and is no longer relevant in our inclusive society. We need to start over. We need to get the Electoral College out. All the things that capitalism does, we need to knock that out. We shouldn't have checks and balances on people. That's the end game here, a new constitution, a new country. And these people are relentless, and they're starting with the history.
You know, it's amazing to me. Yesterday, The Blaze ran a story of somebody on Facebook that tweeted something from Hobby Lobby. It was a vase with a cotton plant coming out, like flowers. And the woman was really offended by it and said, you know, this is an ode to slavery and all of this nonsense. And the take on The Blaze yesterday was, you know what, this is an important story. And it's an important story because if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, nobody gets to, I'm really offended by that vase of cotton in Hobby Lobby, unless your life is pretty sweet. All of the things that we're complaining about are embarrassing when you look at what's really happening around the world and the struggle that is just around the corner for all of us if we don't wake up.
Well, it's the individual American that's got to decide, do you want to hold on to your country? Do you want to hold on to historical figures? Do you want to hold on to America's traditions? Or do you want to let these Huns, H-U-N-S, Huns, who are coming in to destroy everything, win? And it extends into the media, because the media is sympathetic with this change. It extends everywhere. And people have got to start to wise up and bolt up and educate themselves about history and current events.
Tell me a little bit about, before we leave Franklin, I'm sorry to say, I was not up on Franklin saying, you got to give us Canada. I wasn't aware of that. Tell that story.
Look, Franklin was a very canny negotiator, right? He never thought he was going to get Canada. But he went in and he basically said to the British government, to the king, we want to stay with you. You know, Franklin was not Sam and John Adams. He wasn't. He wanted to stay. But he wanted to stay on America's terms. And his vision was that the United States, the new country, would control the northern part of the Americas. So it was all about that. But Franklin was a visionary, and he saw that the king was never, ever going to be reasonable. So that he said, all right, we have to fight. But here's the compelling part about Franklin in the book. He and his son, William Franklin, hated each other because William Franklin stayed loyal to the king.
Yeah.
And he was the governor of New Jersey. And Benjamin Franklin had his own son thrown into one of the worst prisons the colonies had in Connecticut. Benjamin Franklin made that happen. And the two never reconciled. And it broke Benjamin Franklin's heart.
Yeah.
But he did it in his mind for the revolution.
And he did it. It did break his heart. And then you know, throughout, Thomas Paine felt that Franklin was like his dad, and they had this father-son relationship where Franklin had lost his son, who was in prison, and then in the end, he felt betrayed by Thomas Paine as well. He's a tragic figure in many ways.
Franklin, you know, lived to a long, long life, and is perhaps the most creative politician has ever been in America. But he was a stormy guy. He was a very stormy guy.
What do you mean? What do you mean he was the most creative?
Emotional.
Yeah, you said the most creative politician. First of all, I've never thought of him as a politician. But what do you mean by that?
Well, he was very canny in the way he manipulated people, and he got the French finally to come in on our side, which is a miracle. He was behind the scenes when the Constitution was forged in Philadelphia. He used his power with the Pennsylvania militia to help Washington, who was like foundering. So he was deeply involved in politics, and he was so creative. His suggestions to Thomas Jefferson, never credited to him, gave us pretty much the Bill of Rights and all of this. But he was a conflicted man, very sensitive man. And that if he thought that you were slighting him, as he did at the end with Tom Paine, then he would kind of withdraw from you. We know a lot of people like that today. But they're fascinating individuals, all of them. And they're not perfect. They're, you know, it's totality of a person's life. Everybody is a sinner. All of us are sinners. But to try to destroy our legacy and to denigrate these men that I write about in Killing England, I think that's just sinful, a crime, a social crime. I'm going to fight it all away.
Bill, I've only got about a minute left here, but let me ask you this. If I took Stephen Hawking, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, and put them in a room, which is a more impressive group of minds? Those minds or Jefferson, Franklin, Washington, Adams, Madison?
The latter, because there was no structure. They started it from scratch, whereas the moguls that you refer to take advantage of our structure to progress and create things. These men that I write about in Killing England, they started it from nothing.
Name of the book is Killing England, another New York Times number one bestseller. I'm sure it is out today. The Brutal Struggle for American Independence. You can get it wherever books are sold, also at BillO'Reilly.com. Bill, I'll see you on Friday.
Okay, Beck, thanks again. We really appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
By the way, Killing England, Brutal Struggle for American Independence is available everywhere, as you point out. We have the prep for the interview, and it says, our goal, to further the part of our mission to serve the audience by teaching history. O'Reilly's goal, promote his book and annoy Glenn. That's legitimately what it says. And it worked.
It actually happened. It did.
He's got 17 million books in print on the the Killing series.
Incredible. Just incredible. When it comes to buying mortgage, buying or refinancing, and remember, that's what you're doing. You're buying a mortgage. The bank is not giving you the mortgage. You're buying it. Check the price tag. You don't need more stress in your life. You need a mortgage company that will take that stress away. That's why there's American Financing, the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. They are dedicated to helping you make smart mortgage decisions that align with your financial goals. With American Financing, you get a straightforward and effortless mortgage experience, and they are now doing reverse mortgages. Reverse mortgages are a way for you to keep your house and increase monthly cash flow and lose your mortgage payment. It's not right for everybody. You got to do your own homework on that, but they can help you through that if that's something that you're interested in. They can you can call them right now at 800-906-2440. I've known these people for a very long time. This is a family-owned, operated, and owned business. These guys are really, they're on the up and up, and they are going to treat you right and find the right mortgage for you, not the one a bank wants to sell you. Call them now, 800-906-2440 or AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Glad you've joined us. We are we're trying to do better by you. We are trying to listen to you, and we're trying to serve you better. We're trying to give you the things that you need every day. Anywhere from the information you need to perspective that you need, and also a few laughs. And speaking of that, Pat's going to be joining us here in just a second. But it's been quite a process, and I don't care what anybody says about us in the press, but I want you to know what we're doing and to see the process, because by you knowing what we're trying to do will help us. Last night at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV, we did behind the scenes and a given permission for unprecedented access to absolutely every meeting here over the last couple of months for cameras to document. And originally I did it because I wanted to document it for the company. So the company, I wouldn't have to have meetings over and over again. People could understand it and go back and go, wait a minute, what did he say? What did he mean by that? But we've decided to bring you in on the process because it has been fascinating. Last night we went through, and you can watch this on demand, the radio show and why we're doing things on the radio show that we're doing and where we're headed with that. Tonight, it's all about TV and what I believe TV is, what is happening to TV. You know, right now MSNBC is thrilling that they're number one, but their ratings are about half the size of what Bill O'Reilly had. So it's nothing to be thrilled about. You still suck. You just happen to be number one. People are tuning out in droves. Why is that? And how do we combat that? Tonight, 5 o'clock, what's it like to pitch a TV show to me, the behind the scenes? Don't miss it on the Blaze
Glenn
TV.
Back.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The host of the ever-popular and thrill-fest, really.
Mm-hmm. Highly anticipated.
Highly anticipated.
Yes, that's right. Thrill-fest.
Pat Gray, who is joining us now. Hello, Pat.
Hi. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk about Nancy Pelosi and the dreamiest dreaming dreamers who ever dreamed a dream.
Yeah. That's nice. That's
beautiful.
Nice. Yeah, are you going to mention the people that interrupted her yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
What a surprise that is.
But they only do wonderful things. So yes. That was a wonderful thing.
It was very peaceful.
And in her little post-interview about it, mm-hmm. She actually says she was glad they did that. It was
really?
Good.
Because
nothing
really?
They do is bad.
No.
Right. You know, they're like sprites. They're like happy little sprites who flit around and just cause good things to happen.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I love them.
I saw one of them said they were chanting something of the effect of all of us or none of us. It's like, oh, great, we agree. Yeah, none of you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Right.
See you later.
Yeah. And see, that's your thing. It's not good enough for just them. They want their parents. They want their cousins. They want their uncles and aunts and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Said from the beginning, if you grant amnesty to the dreamers, the sprites in our society, you also must grant to 20 million others.
You have to.
It's just going to happen.
Yeah,
it will just have to happen.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Because you can't separate families and all of that
mm-hmm.
stuff. We stumbled onto something yesterday. The Conservative Review came out with their list of the 25 biggest rhinos and then the 25 best conservatives in office right now. So it crossed Senate and House lines. And it's no surprise who's on either list. It's all the suspects you would expect, like, John McCain was number one rhino. Susan Collins was on there. And the list of all the usual suspects. And then Mike Lee was the most conservative. Rand Paul was in the top five. So it's all the same people. But what we found pretty interesting was just something that confirmed everything we believe, that the longer you're in office, the worse you get. The 25 biggest rhinos had been in office an average of 19.5 years.
Jeez,
almost
average.
20 years on the average for the best conservatives, five years.
So let me ask you this, because I do agree with you. The longer you're in, and this is why studies show, the worst...
It's time for term limits.
Yeah, the mm-hmm. worst progressives in the conservative realm are usually former military people. And that's because they came up in the ranks of the government being in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And so they see everything as through that lens. So if you're a former military man, you have a greater chance of being a progressive and a rhino.
It's really interesting, though.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's a little bit, you know, antithetical. You wouldn't believe it would be that way because you would think the military people are more conservative.
You know, they're just used to, and it's not a bad thing. They just see the world in that way. They see the government as, okay, well, we do it this way, and so the government will move it that way. the other thing, though, to look at is I agree with you that the longer you're in, that
the worse you get.
The worse you get. I agree with that. However, may I also pose this question? Is it also because the greater conservatives are in less than 5 years? Is that possible because we, for the very first time in my lifetime, are really truly electing those conservatives? We are searching and we have beat the trees to get those conservatives
in
there.
It does correspond with the Tea Party movement and all of that. So, yeah, I think that in part that's probably true.
I mean, you know, Mike Lee is... He's number one conservative with 100%
rating. 100%
rating. I mean, you know, he was part of the Tea Party movement.
Yeah.
Rand Paul, part of the Tea Party movement.
Right.
Justin Amash, part of the Tea Party movement. We created those guys. I mean, we looked for those guys.
And on the other side of the aisle, the rhinos, you have like Orrin Hatch, who ranked number five, who is part of the Reconstruction movement, you know, immediately after the Civil War when he came into office.
Right.
Before Utah was even a state.
That's weird.
So, yeah. He's been beaten down. Mm-hmm. The other thing is I saw an interesting article, you know, on the right side of a website where you're reading an article, then on the right there's some really fascinating articles that they try to get you to click on. So I actually clicked on one of them, and it was breaking news.
Okay.
And keep in mind, this was yesterday. HGTV has ousted Joanna Gaines for breaking her contractual agreement. Not even Chip knew what was going on. News broke of this legal whirlwind just a few days ago. Apparently, things have been going downhill for a while, but now it's safe to say the boat has sunken. Their English, not mine. It all started late last November. The boat has sunken. It all started late last November when Joanna Gaines, host of the popular HGTV show Fixer Upper, signed a deal with Shark Tank's Lori Greiner. None of this happened. This is the most incredible thing. I can't get over it. I know we've been talking about it for a while.
No, I know.
I can't get over how outrageous this is in America.
I was on Daily Wire this weekend, and it said, breaking news, scandal with Rush Limbaugh, something happened in his last hour, and he finally speaks out. And I'm like, what the, what? I click on it.
Facial cream?
No. apparently, Rush shocked his audience today, you know, whatever day you're going to read this story, today in his final hour by talking about his ED problem and the cream that he now uses.
Oh my God.
I couldn't believe it. I thought to myself, how is this happening?
How
can you put these things out that are clearly not true?
Absolute total lies. They make up out of whole cloth entire stories and storylines, interviews that didn't happen, quotes that they attribute to people that they never said. How can this be in America?
Know.
And you have no recourse, apparently, because this has been going on for how many years?
We have, when we pulled it down myself, because I saw it about Joanna Gaines, and I'm like, that is not true. How is this running on my own website? Well, it happens because you enter contracts with companies, and these companies say, I'm going to fill this box on your website. And so you don't sign the...
You don't sign the individual ads.
A company, and they sell that one thing.
And they sell whatever they can sell.
Right, they sell whatever they... You expect them to have certain ethics and standards. Well, we don't work with that one that doesn't have those ethical standards anymore. However, it's easy, apparently, it is easy to get caught up in this because they just slip through because there's no machine. It's AI.
Yeah.
So it's just going out and pulling that one in here. So it's not really a person. And so it's this weird thing that when they start to track it down, you call the ad agency and say, how the hell could you put that on? And they'll say, first of all, we didn't. Let's check that out. Let's find out. They'll check it out. And then they'll say, okay, it's whack-a-mole. We put a block up. It won't come here. Well, they find a way to work around that in the system, and it just pops in because, again, it's machine.
It's the unintended consequences of modern technology.
And
you can't track down the company? Is there no way to at least get to the vendor? And then they can tell you whose spots they're promoting?
I will tell you that Joanna Gaines, we've talked about this, Joanna Gaines' attorney called us after we pulled it off, and they said, help us, tell us who these are. They got to
really
be crazy.
Pissed off about this.
They should be.
And the worst
they
part,
should be.
The worst
they
part
should.
About it is that when Joanna Gaines does leave for facial cream, no one's going to believe it.
And her facial cream company is going to fail.
Right.
I know. That's the biggest
she
concern
can be on
here.
On your doorstep, selling it door to door, and you're like, get out of here. Hey, did you see the? Did you see the president's speech?
I watched today. 30 seconds of it.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're gonna really delve into that one
big time,
deeply,
big time.
One great line.
Trump and the UN are both right up my alley.
He added some good lines there. I'll give you this one. The problem in Venezuela is not that socialism has been poorly implemented, but that socialism has been faithfully implemented.
Oh, nice.
It's a great line.
He had some really good lines.
That's great. Yeah. Who wrote that for him? Yeah.
This guy who left and then started selling facial cream.
I don't know,
cream.
But it had some great, really, truly tremendous lines in it. I mean, epic. Ronald Reagan style lines.
Wow.
Yeah. Some scary things like we're going to have no choice but to utterly destroy North Korea.
I know. They are making noise like that's a possibility. Like we might do a preemptive strike. I've never thought that possible, but now it seems to be.
And a lot of the news channels are actually reporting it that way with just, that part of it. He did lead up to it, however, and you mentioned this earlier, that he said if we are attacked or our allies are attacked, we will have to have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. And I mean, let's be honest about it. If they fire a missile at the United States of America, does anyone doubt that's what we're going to do?
No.
We are going to absolutely
But the problem will be, you violate the airspace. Right now, so far, they have not violated the airspace over Japan. What they've done is they've flown so high that it's
not in their airspace.
It's not in their airspace. Mm-hmm. So they've flown it over their airspace as to not violate and then splash down with their trajectory towards Guam, but crash down, splash down before. So the question is, if they come in low, do we fire?
I think the answer is yes. You got to shoot it down. But when it goes over the top of their airspace, I think we just ignore it and let it go. But if it comes in low, you have to because you don't know where that's going.
And you know what's crazy is think of how much money these things are worth.
Oh, yeah.
And you know they're sitting with an empty nose cone.
Yeah.
I mean, they're putting anything in it. I mean, you know, they could probably be shipping, you know, citizens that rebelled. A member of the Kim Jong-un family is in the nose cone going, let me out, let me out.
The only good part is, did you read the quote from Kim Jong-un the other day? He said, something was just telling me that this is the next chapter in my life. There are lots of skin products out there that didn't work for me. So I got some of the world's leading skin experts together to create Lumidare face cream. And this one actually works. So I'm leaving my position to go sell face cream.
You guys don't have the update on that.
Yeah. Oh,
the problem with that was that call came into the White House. But Donald Trump, believe it or not, was in the Rose Garden giving a speech about his erectile dysfunction.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah, it shocked a lot of people.
Wow, we could have
saw it. Foiled again.
Yeah.
Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and TV networks, also available at iTunes. Subscribe to the podcast or die. It's a new promo.
Really? I don't think that might be a little...
It's a little aggressive.
How about you don't subscribe to the podcast? We have no choice but to utterly destroy you and your family.
Yeah, it's a little more lenient.
Yeah, it's a little clunky. I want to tell you about Bonnie and Michael's story. Bonnie and Michael had a house in Ohio they were looking to sell for about a year. Nothing was done. The agent never called, never kept them posted. They, you know... Like, we all run busy lives, and quite honestly, we get so busy. I don't know if this is just me, but we get so busy, I do, that I am more lenient on things. Because I'm like, I don't know. I haven't have really had a chance to pay attention to that. So I give people a little extra slack, and before you know it, a year has gone by, and you're like, okay, you haven't even really done anything to sell my house. So Bonnie and Michael wanted to make a change, and they went with realestateagentsitrust.com because they listened to this program.
When they reached out, we immediately got on the phone, had two real estate agents, I think, reach out. They got their real estate agent, Stacy, and she got to work right away and in no time received an offer on the house. Their whole house, they had been working with somebody else who kept giving them excuses or not contacting for a year. Stacy at realestateagentsitrust.com gets involved. The house sold in 2 weeks. You want your house sold. You want this monkey off your back. You want to be able to move on with your life. You want to get the most money sold on time. Realestateagentsitrust.com. They're going to help you find a great real estate agent in your town. Thousands of families have already put it to the test. The results are truly remarkable. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. That's realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary. That's what the United Nations is all about. That's what the United Nations is for. Let's see how they do.
You know, maybe it's just me, but I prefer my world leader not to nickname other world leaders.
You have the wrong president.
I know. I know. Is that, you know, if I could just say one thing, could I just get that? When you're at the United Nations, you don't refer to people with nicknames.
Maybe I if I had one thing to take, I think I'd take something else. Like, keep the nicknames and I'll take something else. But he's not. I will say that speech read a lot better than at least the clips I've heard from it, because we were obviously on the air as it was going on.
Well, he's not a good speech.
He's not a good prompter guy. Right. No. I mean, you know, that's honestly not a big knock on him at all.
No, very few people are.
It's hard to do, first of all.
Yeah, George Bush was, I mean, name the last one. Bill Clinton was okay. I think Barack Obama
would be the one people would point
yeah,
to.
Yeah, he was very good, but after a while, there was nothing real there.
No.
You never felt that it was real.
Right. I'd rather have a president just, you know, talking honestly from the heart, to be frank about it. But
if you look at Ronald Reagan was a guy who used notes. And a lot of times you would see him using the notes and he would look down at his notes and then back up. Ronald Reagan was the last guy, I think, that we had that could actually take what he wanted to say, knowing the ins and outs of all of it, and then translate it in a way that Americans could hear. I think Barack Obama was good at that, but he could only really translate it most times unscripted, in ways that only some Americans could hear, not all Americans.
Right. Barack Obama was a reader. You know, he went up and did those speeches and what he was known for. And I was never in love with his style either. But, I mean, for people who liked that style, he was reading soaring speeches that were well written by somebody else most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, I'd prefer, if given the choice, someone who just speaks from the heart and knows it. You know, I mean, you look at some of the, I mean, you know, this is a small example, but Mick Mulvaney, who is the guy who is the director of the budget for Trump, is that. Ask him any question about anything and he could just go off on it because he knows it so, so well.
Glenn Beck.